I'm Dr. Connie Lester, the director of the Riches Program, and you are listening to the Riches Documentary Podcast. Welcome to the Riches Documentary Podcast. Riches, the regional initiative for collecting the histories, experiences, and stories of Central Florida, is an umbrella program housing interdisciplinary public history projects that bring together different departments at the University of Central Florida with profit and nonprofit sectors of the community in order to promote the collection and preservation of the region's history. By facilitating research that records and presents the stories of communities, businesses, and institutions in Central Florida, Riches seeks to provide the region with a deeper sense of its heritage. This series will feature a podcast every 2 weeks, in the middle and at the end of each month, that will explore various aspects of Central Florida history. In today's episode, Space, Cocoa Beach Frontier, Mark Hermannsdorfer takes a look at NASA and the impact of the United States Space Program on Central Florida.
Welcome, listeners. Today I'm here in the Institution for Simulation and Training Building on Research Parkway to interview Dr. Lori Walters. The topic of the discussion is the city of Cocoa Beach and how it has been affected by the missile and space program from the 1940s until today. Without further ado, let's get this started. First off, Dr. Walters, would you mind telling our listeners a little bit about yourself and how you became interested in this topic?
All right, well, right now I work for the Institute for Simulation and Training here at UCF, and I do virtual heritage, which is essentially I take topics from any time period, but I specifically work from the post-World War II topics, and we recreate items that are no longer there. So, like the launch complexes at Cape Canaveral, we virtually recreate them, and my current endeavor is the 64-65 New York World's Fair. That's in essence what got me into virtual heritage, was my work that I had done out at Cape Canaveral. My dissertation is on the impact of the space and missile industry on the city of Cocoa Beach. I also have conducted hundreds of interviews with individuals who lived in Brevard County during the 1950s and 60s, more specific to Cape Canaveral and the city of Cocoa Beach than to Kennedy Space Center. I've also digitized over 30,000 images pertaining to life in Brevard, more, again, Cocoa Beach, and at Cape Canaveral as well. I've been working probably in this area since 1988, somewhere around that, so it's been a long time.
What first drew you into the space program? You said you do post-World War II studies, but...
Actually, it was by very, I guess you wouldn't call it dumb luck. I had a course that was a Florida history course that I didn't want to take, but it fit into my schedule. And everyone was doing older topics, you know, pre-World War II topics. And one day, obviously they assigned us a long paper. And one day I was driving through the city of Cocoa Beach and I saw City Hall. And it fascinated me because it was constructed in 1963 and it has it's wonderful space age architecture. It's changed significantly since. During one of the hurricanes, I believe it was David in 79, they had quite a bit of leakage in the front windows, and so they've changed the front facade, you know, quite a bit. But at one time, it was beautiful space-age architecture. And I had seen, you know, bits and, you know, just remnants of that in the structure. And I had seen photographs of it prior to. And so I said, boy, you know, this town would be interesting to write something on. So I stopped my car and I walked into City Hall and I asked if they had any records. And the woman at the front desk pointed me to the city clerk. Her name was Donna Archer, who was a wonderful lady who looked at me and didn't laugh and didn't say, go away, kid. She said, yes, we do have quite a bit of archival material here. And fortunately for me, the prior city clerks were pack rats. And they had kept everything. I mean, I even found receipts from the city renting cars to go from Cocoa Beach to Orlando from 1952. So they had everything. They had every building permit, you know, hard copies of every building permit they had done well back to the 1920s, all the way through, you know, obviously this was in the late 80s and 90s when I was doing this. They were very cooperative. No one ever, you know, told me to go away. And so that's really what started me. I actually was not an American historian at the time. I had studied in Britain. I was, in Victorian Britain. And I'd always liked post-World War II America, but I thought there was always such an abundance of post-World War II American historians out there that Victorian Britain was quite interesting, because in some ways it is, you know, it is their rise to, you know, being top dog, and, you know, where they are the drivers of technology and everything. So it's very similar in many ways. And so the transition wasn't difficult for me. And I wanted to do my dissertation on Victorian Britain, and all my advisors told me that I'd be a fool to walk away from Cocoa Beach because of all the primary resource material being so close and it being an interesting topic. So here I am.
So, Dr. Walters, what is it that happens in or around the city of Cocoa Beach that begins these changes that we'll come to see through the end of World War II and then on into the 1960s and beyond?
What changed Cocoa Beach from being this more transient, short-term place into being a more long-term place was a couple of things. One was Sputnik. And Sputnik meant that you had this great infusion of additional funds toward the development of intercontinental ballistic missiles. And ultimately, it also led to the creation of NASA. And NASA was going to be a more permanent presence. And also by this time, it became clear the government had designated that Patrick Air Force Base and Cape Canaveral Air Force Station were going to be permanent installations. They no longer were on this temporary, you know, quasi, we don't know what's going to happen to them in the future type of status. It was clear that they were going to be here for a very long period of time, so contractors were now willing to have more of an investment in the area.
So, Dr. Walters, why is it that Cocoa Beach was showered with such favoritism by the space program? What changes do we see now that these government installations, like Patrick Air Force Base or the Cape, have become permanent settlements?
So Cocoa Beach was uniquely positioned. Its geography was ideal in that they didn't want to have to live on the mainland, because the traffic jams on 520 were legendary. They used to have a little wagon called the Wheezy Wagon, W-E-Z-Y. It was a local AM radio station. And they would ride up and down the side of 520 giving reports of how bad the traffic was, you know, depending upon whether you were going, you know, the shifts were changing going in or out of the Cape. And it was horrible. I mean, it was as bad as anything that you could ever possibly imagine in Los Angeles. It was really bad. And so a lot of people said, why do I want to live in Cocoa or on Merritt Island when I have to go through this long traffic on 520? Because you got to remember, there's two bridges that take you, you know, at this particular area of Brevard County, it is three separate geographic regions. You have the mainland, you have Merritt Island, and then you have the barrier islands, which Cocoa Beach is on. And so if you live in Cocoa, you have to go over the Indian River, go through Merritt Island, and then go over the Banana River, and then go over to Cocoa Beach. And, you know, those traffic jams, as I said, you know, people said, well, let's live in Cocoa Beach if at all possible. And so it being a very desirable location, the housing prices were far more expensive than they would have been on Cocoa or on Merritt Island. So what you start, and then there being waterfront communities. I mean, you have to remember that most of the homes that you're starting to see developed here are on these islands, these fingers, these little peninsulas, like, I guess they're peninsulas. Yeah, I guess so. These little peninsulas. And they become very, very expensive. These aren't your typical, what you think of as a Florida 1950s home, like maybe 1,100 square foot. These homes that are being constructed in Cocoa Beach are 2,000, 2,500, 2,800 square foot homes. That is a big home for the late 1950s and early 1960s. That is a really big home. So what you start seeing Cocoa Beach become is a home for your upper echelons, your white-collar workers. And so Cocoa Beach develops a reputation for being a very desirable community to live. More of your contractors are having office space, you know, located here. So whether they're working at the Cape itself or whether they're working in support of Cape activities, you know, they really, the white-collar workers want to live in Cocoa Beach. And so you begin this phase between, let's say, 1958 and 1961, where Cocoa Beach becomes a desirable place to live. It has nothing to do with Project Apollo yet. It is all predicated on location, location, location. And now you start to see Las Vegas-style motels come in, all with space-age themes. The Starlight, which is the first, I believe, it's constructed in 1956, so it just predates this. And it's still there. It's under a different name. It's one of the few old motels that are still there. The Satellite, which had that unique sign out front. The Sea Missile Motel, the Polaris Missile, which is still there but under a different name. And you start getting all these space-age themed restaurants, and the community starts really developing an identity that is welded together with what's going on up at Cape Canaveral. You start seeing television programs that refer to, you know, Cocoa Beach and Cape Canaveral almost as one of the same. Whenever you see datelines on newspapers, it's always Cocoa Beach, Florida, you know, because the reporters often stayed at Cocoa Beach. They stayed at the Holiday Inns, and then ultimately the Mercury astronauts would invest their money from Life magazine into the Cape Colony Motel, which is just across from the what was the Ramada Inn and the Holiday Inn, which is now the big Holiday Inn complex. So they really see themselves, and during this time, during Project Mercury, they have the celebrations for the astronauts. They paint A1A red. They have the big banners that say, "Welcome home, John." John Glenn brought the camera that he would take into space at a pharmacy in Cocoa Beach, and they had it modified. It had a handle put on it. Red Williams modified it for him, put a handle on it. It's actually sitting in the Smithsonian today. You can take a look at it. And it's a very, you know, very simple camera, not very expensive. It did the job, though. It did what it needed to do. And so the community really sees itself, and rightfully so, as the home of the astronauts, even though they don't live in Cocoa Beach. They really see themselves as the home of Cape Canaveral, the workers and the astronauts.
Now, we've talked so far mostly about the positive influences of the space program on Cocoa Beach. But in your article on the subject, you also refer to some negatives. Would you mind telling us a little bit about that?
It got a reputation for a party-hardy community. And it was, in part, it was a very party-hardy community. And everyone has to remember that working back then was a lot different. Working at the Cape and ultimately KSC, but more Cape Canaveral, was markedly different back then than it is today. You'd have people that worked out there, you know, they weren't out there just for 8 hours or 12 hours, you know, so they were out there 18, 24 hours straight. And when they were done, they partied hardy. And also this is because they were still in this transient phase when a lot of people aren't living here. You've got guys that are coming from San Diego or from Baltimore or from Denver or from New York or, you know, wherever, you know, the contractors are stationed. And they come here for a very short period of time. They're away from their wives, and they do party hardy. You know, they had a lot of nice bars in Cocoa Beach and in Brevard County as a whole, and so it got this reputation for being Sin City, USA, Sodom on the Banana. Oh God, there was another one. There was another really nasty one too, but I can't remember what it was. But it was overblown. What happened was David Brinkley came down, and he did this expose, you know, on the city of Cocoa Beach. And at that time, Tom Kenny was mayor. This was just before Bob Mirsky became mayor. Tom Kenny was also an exceptional mayor. He really was. Cocoa Beach was blessed with having some in these early, you know, years of boom. They had some just really good mayors. They were just very lucky. And Tom Kenny was the mayor, and he comes in. There's discussion that, and I don't know one way or the other. I can't conclusively, you know, prove one way or the other. But there's discussion that, you know, these roving bands of teenagers that were on the beaches, you know, raising hell, whether they really were teenagers from the schools, because at that time Cocoa Beach didn't have a high school. They were from Melbourne. Cocoa Beach High School hadn't even been created yet. they would have gone to school in, on the mainland. So, you know, we don't know whether these, you know, roving bands of teenagers, you know, really teenagers, or whether they were 18, 19, 20 years old that were paid off, you know, just to, you know, raise hell or whatever. No one, you know, no one can prove one way or the other. But this did come out, and it was a network broadcast, a half-hour broadcast. And when the people of City of Cocoa Beach saw it, they went ballistic. They actually hung him in effigy. There's a great picture, Brinkley, you know, of a nice straw figure of him being hung in effigy. And they never forgave him. They never. I bet you today you could find people who were old-timers who lived in Cocoa Beach at that time. And to this day, they would, David Brinkley, rah, 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 rah. You know, a lot of young people don't even know who David Brinkley is. But, you know, and people who lived in Cocoa Beach after that incident, who came to Cocoa Beach afterwards, they don't have that animosity towards him because it wasn't their community when he did it.
Thank you for your time, Dr. Walters, and thank you, listeners, for checking out this podcast. If you'd like to know more about Cocoa Beach or the space program, I recommend looking up Dr. Walters' articles in the Florida Historical Quarterly, as they are both excellent reads. Thank you for being with us, and I'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Riches Documentary Podcast. Feel free to contact us with any questions or comments on the program that you just heard. Please join us for the next episode, The Winter Park Sinkhole, Eyewitness Reactions to a Disaster.